Welcome, friends, to The Hero Beside Me, the podcast that seeks to explore the professional and private lives of working dogs of all kinds. For thousands of years, humans and canines have shared a special bond and an essential partnership, which continues to grow in importance in our society today. Dogs are helping humans in a myriad of ways, performing essential tasks that only they can perform. The more we learn about them, the more endless their potential seems to be. It is my goal to document the way these amazing animals are making an indelible mark on our world with their astonishing abilities, incredible drive, insatiable zest for life, and unconditional love, which they generously bestow upon their humans. Join me as I explore the wonder of these canine heroes beside us. Listeners, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Today, you'll hear from three dog handlers who are partnering with dogs in different ways to help humans and wildlife live together safely and harmoniously. They'll be shedding light on a special career path for dogs, wildlife management. While that sounds like a job title for an administrator at a zoo or the Department of Fish and Game, this version of the job is only for dogs.
My name is Rebecca Gibson, and I am the owner of Flyaway Geese, and we train border collies to do wildlife management in humane ways for construction projects, schools, golf courses, corporate facilities, park and recreation, anywhere that there might be an issue with wildlife, nuisance wildlife, causing a problem with the public.
My name is Mark Beal, and I am the Natural Resources Program Manager at Glacier National Park. Gracie is a Blue Merle Border Collie. She actually started out as a family pet, and about a year and a half into that is when I got the idea of doing a wildlife shepherding dog and using Gracie in that capacity.
My name is Nils Pedersen. I'm the director of the Wind River Bear Institute, which is a non-government organization that specializes in non-lethal solutions to human wildlife conflict issues with a focus on bear. And our mission is to reduce human-caused bear mortality and human-wildlife conflict, using these dogs to find bears for detection, for conflict, pushing them out of places, and also for public education and outreach.
One of the things that I get asked a lot is, you know, why are the Canada geese such a problem and why are you dealing with them? You know, I thought they were a migratory bird and that type of thing. And, you know, we do most of the work that we do is with migratory birds. And that's simply because they are protected by the Migratory Bird Act. Canada geese started out in Canada, obviously, and all they ate was salt marsh grass. And so they would travel from Canada south during the winter because the salt marsh grasses in Canada would freeze. And so they couldn't eat. And so it necessitated a 2,000 miles sometimes migration from, they would leave Canada in October and go back to Canada in February. And at that point, the Canada goose was starting to have population issues, not necessarily because of overhunting, but mostly because they were overpopulating and they were killing each other off in these salt marshes. And so the Migratory Bird Act protected them from being overhunted, but what it also did was increase population without a whole lot of population control. They would go down south to the salt marsh grasses in the Delmarva area of Delaware and Virginia and Maryland. They would go down to the, you know, Louisiana, Mississippi, Gulf Coast area, salt marsh grasses. And what they did was, as they started to die off, as they started to evolve, and they changed from a bird that only ate salt marsh grass to a bird that started to eat farm fields. And they really like manicured grass because what a goose eats, it pulls up by the root. So grasses with shallow root bases are very attractive to them, which most golf courses and well-manicured places have shallow root-based grasses. That once the birds evolved into a bird that didn't need salt marsh grass, then there was no reason to migrate anymore. And what that changed is that the average Canada goose that migrated was putting, 2,000 miles a year on its body. So they only lived to be like 7 or 8 years old. And geese don't nest until they're 3 years old. So they were really only putting out 4 broods of babies in a lifetime. So the average pair may produce, let's say easy numbers, 20 babies in their lifetime, a migratory goose. Well, when they became a resident goose and they stopped that migration because they didn't need to get food, those birds don't put nearly as much pressure on their bodies as those migrating birds did. So those birds may live to be 25. Same bird that could only produce 4 clutches of babies before is now producing 20 to 22 clutches of babies in a lifetime at 5 apiece. You change from putting 20 babies into the world to 120 babies just over that evolution of changing from salt marsh grass to manicured grass. So your populations increase so quickly. And a goose poops 4 times an hour and eats 5 square feet of grass a day. So you put 20 geese on a golf course green, and in an hour, that's 80 piles of poop. And they carry Giardia and Coccidia and E. coli, and people are hitting golf balls through that. And then they pick the ball up and they put their tea in their mouth, as they're going. I mean, it's gross.
Dealing with habituated wildlife is an issue. This is my 5th national park, and it's been an issue in every single national park I've worked in. The challenge being that habituated wildlife seem tame. And, if you get people coming from a city or an area where they're not used to being around wildlife, they think it's a petting zoo. And that's when bad things happen. These are wild animals. They are dangerous. And that, a lot of times, we get the response, oh, well, I'm just doing it this once. And we have to remind them that, we get 3 million people a year. And if everybody did it just once, then that's a lot of bad interaction that the wildlife have with humans then. And so we just try to remind them that, to not, again, do any action that's going to put them or their family at risk or put the wildlife at risk. Because if the wildlife becomes food conditioned, gets used to people feeding them, then, 2 days later, a group of people might be hiking and they're trying to do the right thing by not feeding them, then those animals can become very aggressive and can injure people. And then at that point, we have to remove them from the population. And that is the nice way of saying we have to go out and put them down.
Bears that become habituated to people lose their wariness towards them. They no longer consider people to be a threat. They think, it's just fine to walk through this crowd of people if they want to. And that can be a problem for sure. But what's worse is after that happens, they often become food conditioned, which is a learned association between people and access to food. So those bears start actually approaching people looking for food, coming into human use areas, breaking into sheds, tearing up property, and threatening people as well. And so those bears are generally destroyed. And there's no way of preventing that from happening. This is just a never-ending cycle of bears becoming nuisance animals, basically, and then being removed lethally.
The border collie is one of the only breeds of dogs that is a gathering dog or move stock with their eye. So when a border collie moves sheep or cattle, if you've ever watched that, they stalk things. So they put their heads down and their tails in between their legs and they move things with their eye. If you think about it, that's the same body posture and body positioning of a wolf or coyote when they hunt. So most of the wildlife that we are hazing with these dogs are birds and things of that nature, whose natural predators are Arctic foxes, coyotes, and wolves. And so the body posture and the movement of a border collie triggers mentally in the mind of the bird the same thing that a predator does. So, I could do this with any breed. I could haze birds with any breed of dog. But if I want long-term effects and I want the birds to want to stay gone, I need a dog that convinces them that it's a wolf or coyote. So if you imagine a lab running out after something, like let's say it's retrieving and, you know, in a duck hunting situation or something like that, it bounds after things, you know, it's loping and bounding. A border collie stalks, and I need for that bird to have that fear that there's a predator in place. So basically the border collie gives me a wolf or coyote that I can control who, what, where, and how it hunts, and there's no danger to the bird. So a border collie doesn't have a kill instinct, so they don't have any instinct to harm the birds. So it's safe for the birds, and the dog has the predator effect on them that no other breed would have.
If you've ever seen a border collie work, they get what we call the border collie stare, where they just focus right in this very intense stare, and she starts creeping, you know, kind of doing that border collie creep up on them. And that's a lot different than what other dogs do that are on leash in that parking lot. And I think that intense scrutiny that Gracie's gaze puts on them makes it feel like she's a predator, and that makes them feel uncomfortable. So they move away. And basically what we do is it's a slow process. You know, we just walk right behind them. They move away. And if they keep moving, we keep following. And if they stop, you know, we kind of stop for a little bit and then move forward in a slow manner until we get inside their uncomfort zone and make them move again. And, you know, the whole process takes less than 5 minutes. The way that we train Gracie is I contacted the Wind River Bear Institute, and they specialize in Karelian bear dogs dealing with habituated black bears or grizzly bears.
The Karelian bear dog is really the perfect dog for that because they are brown bear hunting dogs from Finland. They really want to, you know, pursue, find, and bark and bay brown bear for their hunter. So we're taking that instinct they have and applying it for conservation. And then the Karelian bear dog is also forbidden to be human aggressive. So they're to be very good with people. So perfect for education and outreach purposes. So Carrie, you know, took this primitive breed and designed a training curriculum for them for certification as wildlife canine is the title. We managed the longest running aversive conditioning program on grizzly bear in the world in Peter Lougheed Provincial Park there in Alberta. And that meant every morning waking up, going out into the park, finding every conflict bear that we had. We had about 10 bears at that time when I was working there in 2012. Finding each of these bears before campers are getting up, getting the bears out of the campgrounds, away from people so that they're not, you know, any surprise encounters or conflict. So getting these bears out of bad areas, using the dogs to find them, would largely entail using them as strike dogs, it's called. So we have specifically modified bear shepherding vehicles, which are trucks that have toppers on them with a little platform in the back and pet guard over the windows there. So the dogs can ride in the back and sniff. And when we hit bear scent, they're going to bark and alert us to where that bear is. And so by doing passes, we can get an idea of where that bear must be based on the dog indication, determine if they're in a good spot or if that's a spot where the bear would then need to be moved. And so, if the bear is in a bad spot, we can get the dogs out on the ground. We work our dogs almost exclusively on leash. If it's a grizzly bear, we're working with at least two people, two dogs, and walking that bear out of the bad spot. So that means tracking the bear, approaching it, and pushing it. These bears don't want to have anything to do with us. They don't want to have anything to do with these dogs. We have them outnumbered. The dogs are communicating to the bear. We're very aggressive. We want to come get you. You know, you're lucky we're on a leash. And that bear senses that, sees, you know, humans as well as these fearless little dogs that are aggressively barking at them, and they don't like that. They don't like the pressure, and they move along. We're not chasing these bears. We're pushing them at bear speed, which means that we're coming within their, what you call it, a bubble. We're coming within their bubble. They don't like that. It feels stressful having us that close to them. They want to move. We're getting between that bear and the area that we want to defend and just walking them out.
So in the summertime, yeah, we try and get up to Logan Pass or, you know, any of the other areas where there's reports at least once a week. And we try and mix that up. We don't want to go to the same area on the same day at the same time, because the wildlife will figure that out. They are quite smart. And so we mix it up. Sometimes we go early in the morning up to Logan Pass, and other times we'll go, you know, in the evening and, you know, just manage the wildlife that way. And then in the wintertime, of course, not this winter because we're not going into the park, we're still teleworking. But in past winters, you know, she would go in almost every day with me. We'd go out probably once in the morning and do a circuit around the housing area and move any deer out that we found. And then we'd do it again in the afternoon. And then that would pretty much be her day. The rest of the day when she wasn't working would be spent curled up in a bed in my office. In the housing area, there's times where she'll shepherd out about 8 or 10 deer in a group, and they're really easy to move. They see her coming now, and they have their escape routes planned out, and we pretty much know which way they're gonna move out. And then up at Logan Pass, you know, with the bighorn sheep, it just depends on how many are there. Some nights there's anywhere from 2 to 6, but one night she was keeping a group of 15 bighorn rams out of the parking lot. And you could tell they wanted to come in because there's attractants there, whether it's, you know, garbage or radiator fluid or antifreeze that might have leaked out onto the pavement. And they would, you know, they're attracted to the salts. And so, yeah, you could tell they wanted to come in. But because Gracie was there, she was keeping them all out, and she was doing a really good job. It's fun to watch her work.
With geese, a lot of times, what we tell people is the first 30 days, we do a really intensive push, and we may come out 3 or 4 times a day, or we may come, on a construction site, we may be there all day, every day for the first 30 days, putting heavy amounts of pressure on those birds to convince them that this space is not a safe place to be in, that that predator can come from anywhere at any time and be on top of them, you know, so that they don't, the reason they're here is they're here to eat. You know, generally speaking, that's why a bird is on a site, that there's a food source, there's a safety piece to it. Usually there's fresh water involved. You know, all of those pieces of the puzzle come into play when a bird finds a safe place that they want to be in. And so what we have to convince them of is that that predator can be anywhere, and it's not worth it to put their heads down to eat or to drink because that predator may sneak up on them from somewhere. So in the first 30 days, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of presence from the dog. And then, you know, we may back up to 1 or 2 visits a day, or we may back up to 3 to 5 times a week. It just really depends on, again, the species of bird and what the draw is to the facility. I mean, if I'm doing goose control on a property that's got, you know, acre upon acre, like a big golf course that's just got beautiful manicured grass, and you know, the geese are loving life eating there, and they're resident geese that have never been anywhere else, and they've been born on this facility, you know, it's going to take a bit more pressure to push those out than a property that, you know, a parking lot that maybe has some strips of grass, but there's no water and that kind of thing. So it really depends on the location and the type of bird that we're dealing with.
You know, other kinds of work can involve other tasks that are sometimes less desirable, like responding to incidents where a bear's been shot in self-defense. And, you know, fish and game wants to know if that bear's alive or dead. Well, what's the best way of determining that? Let's bring the dogs in, track it. Bear's been hit on the side of the road on the highway. Well, is that bear going to make it? Is it dead in the woods over there? Let's find out. We can do that, you know. We'll use these dogs to respond to mauling incidents. We will investigate wildlife-related crime, like poaching events, wildlife trafficking. But we'll also use these dogs to find dead things. And, you know, we've also used them for cougar as well as moose. Large and potentially dangerous wildlife is what I usually say. We'll also do that bear den detection work. We've done that, you know, to find polar bear dens for oil industry groups so they can avoid them. Up on the North Slope of Alaska. That's always a really interesting job. dogs are really good at it. The other method that folks will use is infrared, so looking for heat signatures of bear dens. So, you know, sometimes we're either confirming suspected bear den location because the dogs, if the dogs indicate, you know, that that's a bear den, the infrared will come up with lots of little hot spots or even miss dens altogether. So really the dogs are the best way to confirm or otherwise clear an area through a den survey. That's another part of the work.
So we do have several dogs on airports doing wildlife management and have over the last 20 years. And we've done wildlife management for most of the Air Force bases up and down the East Coast. And the dogs are just so effective at that and so effective at managing those problems that it really does take a lot of the work out of it for those airports to manage their populations that way.
Worked for 4 weeks with the Alaska Fire Service as part of wildland firefighting. They end up killing a lot of bears because they have these camps in which bears are coming into and getting interested in their food and other things they have, bar chain oil. So rather than having to destroy those bears, we're doing proactive sweeps of the camps and kicking those bears out before they become a problem. Also letting these firefighters get a good night's rest after a long day of work and not having to deal with bear issues all night.
Listeners, we're currently trying to determine the future of this show, and we would really appreciate your feedback. If you have a moment, we'd really appreciate it if you'd fill out our listener feedback survey. You can find a link to it in the show notes, or if you go to herobeside.me, click on the podcast button, you'll see a listener feedback survey button at the top of that next page. It only takes about 2 minutes to complete, and we would really appreciate it. Thanks so much. Back to the show.
The training was, for Gracie, it was 12 weeks of training where she would go out. It was kind of two-pronged. One of them was learning, you know, basically learning the commands that the trainer was teaching her, but then also getting used to being in places where there are a lot of people and noisy, which is the areas that we work in quite a bit in the park, so that she could get used to that. And then the other prong of the training was actually working with domestic sheep to get her used to pushing them. Instead of, you know, border collie, we usually go out and try and round something up and bring it back. But what we wanted her to push. So I think it took maybe 1.5 sessions, the trainer said, for her to figure out the idea that, oh, okay, they don't want me to bring them back to them. They want me to push them into this. You know, we would go out in a 5-acre pasture and the sheep would be turned loose and we'd have to get them into a round pen. And basically by using Gracie to push them and me giving the voice commands and working together that way. So it was pretty intense and pretty fun training, though.
Border collie's natural instinct to herd is there. Interestingly enough, though, what we do with these dogs is against what their instinct is. So as I told you, their instinct is to go out and around things and bring them to you. And when you're training a dog to work sheep, one of the ways that you correct them if they're doing the wrong thing or coming onto the sheep too fast or cutting their outruns short, any type of correction on sheep is to keep them from getting their stock. So you don't let them get behind the sheep and bring them to you. If you think about what they're doing with nuisance wildlife is that they're pushing them away. So they never technically get their stock. So for me, it's the training process is about early on teaching these dogs as puppies that the goal is to make birds fly. So we start when they're small puppies, you know, when they're 10, 12 weeks old, and we've got them working, you know, ducks that can't fly, or we'll put them in a pond with birds and we teach them that they get praise if the birds fly. And then later on, as their natural instinct starts to kick in, they've already got that base that says, okay, our goal is to make birds fly. So that then I can use their natural instincts to teach them lefts and rights and, you know, all those types of things that they need to learn as well. But I've got that piece that is not their natural instinct in them very early on.
You know, our people getting fed up with property destruction you know, day after day, this bear is just torn up my chest freezer or whatever it may be, you know, and it leads to what you could call negative bear human interactions, right? These are negative experiences people have, and their perceptions start to change. They start to think these bears are a real problem, you know, they're a nuisance. And what we'd rather do is never let that bear learn how to do this in the first place. So secure that bird feeder, store your garbage in bear proof containers that the bear isn't going to be able to get into, so they just don't try. And then once you have all those attractants secure, then pushing the bear out and teaching them that it's not a good place to be in the first place. There's no benefit for them to be here. So, you know, we use the dogs a lot for that, for public education. They help get people engaged in a way that, you know, bear proof trash can is never going to do. The dogs are much more charismatic. And, you know, it may be the case that a bear proof container is what you need, but if you can get people engaged with the dogs, you have them, you know, get them on board with the message, start thinking about better ways of dealing with bears. You know, we encounter a lot of folks that say, well, I'll just shoot them all, you know, just shoot all these bears. Well, there's other ways, you know, we're using these dogs.
You know, I think it's a big ship we're trying to turn here, changing people's perception on how to act around wildlife. Has it been effective? I think it's been effective, again, in our little corner of the world, to bring it to the forefront when people enter the park. And I think it's not change we're going to see in just a few years. I think it's change that might, you know, take a decade or so, and other places starting to take on this technique. But I think, you know, like I said, it's a big ship to turn, but if, you know, you got to start somewhere and sometime, and if we can start it now and start it here, then I think that'll be a good thing. And it seems like, you know, we're starting to get some traction and getting the recognition for what we're trying to do and why we're trying to do it. So hopefully that will start taking off in some other places. This job has changed our relationship. You know, she was always kind of, you know, she either like, you know, me or, you know, our daughter quite a bit. But then after doing this, when the vest comes out, you know, she has a work vest that she wears to identify her as a working dog. When that comes out and it goes on, you can see a shift in her personality. And then, you know, she's definitely at that point focused on me because, you know, we're the ones working together and, you know, focused on the task at hand. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely made it more special. That's for sure.
I love working with dogs. You know, my background is in wildlife biology, but dog training is what got me into the job, and it's still what I find to be most interesting about it. You know, working with the dogs doesn't matter to me as much if I'm working with grizzly bear, black bear, moose, polar bear, cougar. You know, what's the job? Just love working with my dogs.
A big thank you to Rebecca, Mark, and Nils for being on the show and for the work they're doing with their dogs to help humans and wildlife live in harmony. Listeners, when you're out exploring the natural world this summer, remember to respect it and to respect the wildlife. And if you'd like to get in touch with any of our guests, you can find their info in the show notes. You can also follow the adventures of Gracie the Border Collie on her Instagram account at BarkRangerNP. Thank you for listening to the show today. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or a number of other platforms. As I mentioned earlier, I'm your host, Shauna T. I'm a professional photographer, and I'm currently working on a photography project about working dogs. If you would like information about this project, please visit herobeside.me and sign up for the newsletter. Again, that's herobeside.me. Thanks so much. See you next time.